The perfect combination of versatile athleisure and training apparel has arrived. Thanks to the visionary minds of New Balance, Clutch Athletics, and Rich Paul, the designs reflect the heart of the athlete and the spirit of the community. With rising defensive football stars Will Anderson and Chase Young on the roster, Clutch Athletics brings the best innovative gear to all athletes, giving them style and performance on and off the field. Learn more and purchase Clutch Athletics at newbalance.com.
This is Fantasy Football Today from CBS Sports.
Here we go!
Email us at fantasyfootball@cbsi.com.
Here we go!
It's time to dominate your fantasy league.
Let's go!
Now, here's some combination of Adam, Dave, Jamie, and Heath.
Welcome back from an amazing weekend of NFL football. Awesome games. Hope you enjoyed them. I certainly did. And we'll talk about the fantasy implications for the teams that have been eliminated, like the New Orleans Saints, who we all thought were going to the Super Bowl. This is Monday, January 6th. This is Fantasy Football Today. I'm Adam Azer. I got three people with me today, including back from Hawaii, Aloha Dave. Aloha.
Really? The music?
Yeah. You were there around Christmas time, right?
Yes.
Kalikimaka is a thing to say.
You heard this nowhere in Maui. Nowhere.
How was your trip?
It was fine. It was great. Family reunion type thing, and lots of sunshine and palm trees. You don't get a lot of that in South Florida.
Well, we're happy to have you back. Did you get to watch the playoff games?
I did.
Okay, good.
I spent week 17 in a Hawaiian sports bar. It was very divish, but I enjoyed it quite a bit. And then watched all the playoff games. I was back in the continental United States by then.
Excellent, excellent. Jamie Eisenberg is here. Jamie, hello.
Hey, bud.
What's up, man?
I miss you already.
What happened to the Saints?
The Saints suck.
Oh, my God.
It was so bad. Oh, man. It's a good thing I'm in a playoff challenge.
And they got screwed by the referees again?
Possibly, yeah. I'm in a playoff challenge with only two other people, and everybody went heavy on the Saints, so I might be able to win that one. And Ben Schrager is back.
What's up, Adam?
What's up, Ben? How you doing, man?
I'm great. I'm even better now that the Patriots are done.
Oh, ooh. Wow, that's not how you make friends on this show. All right, so we're going to talk about Dallas hiring Mike McCarthy. We're going to talk about players who impressed us and did not impress us in the playoff games.
Were you impressed by Josh Allen?
I was for a half. He looked a lot better than Deshaun Watson.
I got to tell you, so I get after he catches a touchdown, I get a text message from Adam with just a star.
Oh, yeah, I forgot about that.
And I said, yeah, great, great opening drive. And then I don't hear anything from him the rest of the day.
Well, you know, I was going to text you when he lateraled the ball. What a great decision that was at the end of the first half. That's what stars do. Yeah, we'll talk about that. We'll talk about, really, we're going to focus on the teams as they get eliminated. We're going to do some rankings. We're going to rank the four quarterbacks who were eliminated, the running backs who were eliminated, the wide receivers. You don't have to rank the tight ends because it's Ertz 1, Jared Cook 2, and probably Goddard 3. So let's go to the big news here. Dallas hiring Mike McCarthy. Trying to look up, this happened not long before we started recording, so trying to look up the Green Bay running game under Mike McCarthy. And what I can tell you, the last three seasons, here's where they ranked in rush attempts per game. Last three seasons with McCarthy, not 2019, obviously. They were 20th, 27th, and 32nd in the NFL. Dallas in those three seasons in attempts per game, rush attempts per game, was 2nd, 5th, and 10th. So, you know, Jamie, I'll throw it to you first. Do you think this hurts or helps Ezekiel Elliott? The overall impact of Mike McCarthy taking over Dallas head coach, which is expected, not official, but expected.
I'm not worried about Zeke. When you have a player of his caliber, especially with Jerry Jones still as the general manager and what they paid him, he's going to be fine. You know, he'll get his touches. I can't imagine McCarthy's walking and saying, you know, let's get away from the run. I'm just going to, you know, lean on whoever the quarterback may be because Dak is a free agent. So assuming Dak is back and everything is status quo, I think it's a similar sense of production that you're going to get from these guys. You know, Zeke's still going to be a top five running back wherever you want to rank him. You know, maybe now he falls behind. Dalvin Cook was the guy that I think our overall rankings were sort of mixed on. Saquon, you know, if you want to put him in that category too. But it's going to be a key if they keep Prescott and what that scenario is. And if they keep Amari Cooper too, you know, those two guys are the big The next dominoes to fall for what the Cowboys are going to do. Dak is obviously staying. You know, there's going to be a franchise tag or a contract extension. Cooper's the one that I think we have to keep an eye on.
Ben Schrager, you like this move? McCarthy to the Cowboys?
I like the move for the Cowboys. I don't think it matters for Zeke at all. McCarthy never had Zeke or a Zeke caliber running back with the Packers, so I really don't care about those stats. Maybe it's a touchdown for Zeke, but at the end of the day, he wasn't perfect this year, and Zeke's going to be a top five running back next year no matter what.
Dave, your thoughts?
I agree with Ben for sure. He never had, who was his best running back in Green Bay?
Eddie Lacy.
Eddie Lacy?
Eddie Lacy for a year.
Okay, and then
yeah. Aaron Jones had a nice tail end of Amon Green or no?
Yes. So 2000. So yeah. Actually went back. I looked at every year of Mike McCarthy and running backs that got big work. Amon Green, 2006, his first year, McCarthy's first year, 266 carries, 1,059 yards, 5 touchdowns. 2008, Ryan Grant had 312 carries, just over 1,200 yards. The following year, he had, again, 1,200 yards and 11 touchdowns. Ryan Grant, 282 carries. Eddie Lacy had 284 carries in 2013 and about 1,200 yards and 11 touchdowns. Very similar.
So when he has
Grant.
A guy, he uses him.
Yeah, he uses him. 208. Mm-hmm. Now, I think 284 would be a little on the low end for Zeke, but I think, but the other thing is that as we got further in time with Mike McCarthy, he did run the ball less. So that's what it seemed anyway.
That's also Aaron taking more control. Aaron Rodgers taking more control of the offense too.
Yeah. So right. You know, like play to your personnel. Like they have Zeke, they're going to use Zeke. Do you like it for Dak? I mean, do you think McCarthy is someone who can take Dak Prescott to yet another level?
I'm not sure.
No.
I'm not sure if he can do that. There is going to be a scheme change. They're going to move to the West Coast offense because I don't think McCarthy is going to blow up his playbook to try and fit what Dallas has done because they ran like the Coryell system with Jason Garrett. But what I'm interested to see is if it's going to be a lot like what it was in Green Bay with the ISO routes over and over again.
That was you see it at the end of the Packer season how their offense has gone back to looking very much the same. It's looked very similar.
I kind of thought that way too.
In the beginning of the season, it was a little bit more, you know, bunched on some formations. It was guys doing a little pre-snap movement. It was thrown to the running backs. They got completely away from that toward the end of the year. They got a little bit back to it in week 17. It's hard, you know, taking the play clock down all the way to zero. That's an Aaron Rodgers thing. Brian mm-hmm. Urlacher talked about that in an interview, either this offseason or a previous offseason, mm-hmm. that Aaron likes to see everything that he's going to, you know, be facing right before he hikes the ball. And it looks very similar to what was, you know, McCarthy's offense at the end, which got stagnant, you know. So I think it's going to be interesting to see. You know, one of the things that was talked about with this hire was Jerry wanted somebody who was going to potentially keep the assistant coaches in place, at least the ones that he likes. So does Kellen Moore stay? You know, and that's going to be an interesting one. Does the offensive staff, more importantly for what we talk about, stay intact? And if that's the case, then you wonder, is McCarthy coming in to be the play caller? Is he coming in to be...
How can they hire him and not make him the play caller?
Well, I mean, if you want a head coach with experience, is what Jerry was saying, that, you know, he has an influence on the play calling, but maybe he's not calling every play, you know, and so that there could be something that McCarthy maybe learned in his time off, is that, okay, sure. I can still have an influence on the offense, but I need to be more of an overseer of the entire team. And so that's something I think that we're going to find out.
We've also learned that McCarthy has changed, or he's going to try and change his habits from what he was in Green Bay and use more RPOs and stuff like that and try and add a bunch of new wrinkles to his playbook. We're just going to have to wait and see. But I think Dak can handle it. I don't think it turns Dak into a fantasy superstar. But I'm not worried about Zeke. I wouldn't be worried about Cooper, assuming he stays. It could be good for Gallup, especially if McCarthy doesn't change, because Gallup can win one-on-one matches.
And if Cooper leaves, it could help Randall Cobb, who they have a history together, you know, of McCarthy and Cobb. The one thing I think that with Dak is this feels like his ceiling fantasy-wise. I mean, you know, he may have a few more touchdowns in his arsenal. He may have opportunity to run a little bit more, but we know as quarterbacks tend to get older, that goes away. Not that he's old, but...
He's got plenty of good running years left in him.
Yeah. But, you know, it's not like he's Lamar Jackson at the start of his career. I think, you know, you're talking about a guy that's maybe he has a 5,000 season in him as the NFL continues to develop and the rules continue to change with what they allow. But, you know, if he loses Cooper, he's not going to be as attractive by far.
He threw for more than 1,000 yards more than he had ever thrown in his career. I mean, that is a huge jump to go from
in a free agent year too.
3,885 yards passing in 2018 to 4,902. That is like, that is just a huge, huge jump, and hard to throw for 4,900 yards. Just not very many quarterbacks can do it. Final thoughts on this. You know, I don't know how I feel about Mike McCarthy. You know, who knows how good of a coach he really is. He's probably a pretty good coach. I didn't really want him to be the Giants coach, but I think it's a good fit for the Cowboys because they're ready to win. Like, they're made to win. I think he can take over and use that experience. And I think it's good for the Cowboys. I think he's a good fit for the Cowboys. I don't think he would have been good fit for like a rebuilding team that needed a lot of help.
No. Like, Ron Rivera would have been fine. McCarthy would have been fine. Lincoln Riley would have been a little weird just given what the Oklahoma team looks like. Their offense is obviously fun, but they can't stop anybody.
Right.
And so does that help the Cowboys situation? Matt Rhule, you know, who knows
too
how
risky.
He'll do. Right. Right.
That's the whole
thing. But that's, again, that goes back to the assistants. You know, Jerry wanted somebody who's got experience. He's got a Super Bowl, you know, victory on his resume. And, you know, will he be happy to bring in his own staff, you know, guys that he's worked with, or will he be happy to just keep, you know, guys in place who are there?
All right, let's talk about some football. A great Ben, remember when we didn't really, well, you know, football games. Ben, remember when we didn't really, weren't looking forward to the games?
Oh, this was going
to
be a terrible slate. I didn't really want to watch the game. Yeah, this happened.
What? You guys thought this was going to be a bad slate of games?
Yeah, kind of. Wasn't really that excited about it.
Oh, Adam.
And maybe Ben agreed.
Ben agreed. I don't think Jamie opined. I'm not going to say. Jamie definitely did not say this is going to be a great slate of games. So I'm not giving you credit for that.
I thought that the AFC games were going to be good and the NFC games were going to be kind of ho-hum. And instead we got three great games and one bad one.
With the Seahawks game?
Yeah, it was a dumb. I mean,
it was bad, but it was
Wentz
close.
Getting hurt probably didn't help.
All right, so let's talk about a player who impressed you and a player who didn't. Ben Schrager, I'll start with you. Give me a player who impressed you this weekend.
Oh, Adam Thielen completely impressed me. You know, 129 yards. He looked like that Adam Thielen we got in 2018, starting off the year with how many straight games of 19 plus points? 8 straight games?
Yeah.
And so Adam Thielen, we were not confident with him. He put up a couple goose eggs to end the year, even though we thought he was healthy. He looks to be back, and I'm really excited about his prospects for next year.
What did you think when he fumbled early on in the game? Were you like at a 180 from what you just said?
Completely.
Isn't it crazy how big play in overtime plus a couple other key catches throughout the game.
It changes like, the way totally you look at the whole thing.
It's weird. Well, it's weird how that happened.
This was my guy too, because I, you know, debated a little bit with Jamie about James White versus Adam Thielen in DFS because they were the same price on FanDuel, and I went with Thielen, and my theory wasn't exactly right. It was, you know, they're going to be chasing points, and he wouldn't see the tougher coverage, and
see the tougher coverage.
I think he saw both. He saw Lattimore, he saw Jenkins.
Not in the beginning of the game though.
No, but who did he beat on the deep ball?
Yeah.
He beat Lattimore. Like I don't think they shadowed anyone. But
no, they were playing sides.
Here's the thing. He had gone 2.5 years of being one of the best receivers in football. I wasn't gonna forget about that because two bad games coming back from injury. So that's why I was excited about Thielen and 7 catches, 129 yards, and Diggs was invisible again. That's 3 games in a row of nothing really for Diggs.
Yeah, no targets at the half.
Right. Now they look at where they rank. If you want to spin it forward to fantasy, right? Where they've ranked in pass attempts the last 3 seasons. 21st, and Thielen was a top 12 receiver. They were 6th in pass attempts last year, in 2018. And Thielen was, what was he, like 5th last year? I don't remember. And then this year, they were 30th. So that concerns you a little bit. I mean, being 30th in pass attempts.
Well, can all these guys be good for fantasy? Diggs, Thielen, Cook, you know.
Good, yes. Many, great, no.
Right, but on a week-to-week Cook basis, they're almost never going to be all great.
Well, I mean, 2 of them were great this weekend.
Yeah.
Dalvin
was
great.
But it's usually that. It's usually exactly that.
But that's most teams. I mean, that's how most teams tend to operate.
Right.
You know? So
and you know the Cook will be that one guy most of the time.
Like you get
the receivers. Like, you know, and again, you know, nobody's going to hold anybody to this, but we did our top 10 at each position this past week. And Ben Gretsch had Stephon Diggs at 10th in his PPR rankings. And so I explained it for everybody. You know, if anybody wants to have a different take on my explanation of it, I just gave my opinion on everybody's rank list. And I said, you know, Diggs is the one of all 5 of us, you know, so there was, I think, 7 receivers consistently for every person. There was like 3 that differed, not for everybody, but there was, you know, the same 7 in everybody's ranking. And so Diggs was the one that stood out to me the most by far of the 50 players that were there, you know, again, crossover, but that I don't know if I can rank him in the top 20 wide receivers.
Well, I just don't know how you can rank him ahead of Thielen. I mean, I think it's like, that's what I was all about in 2018.
Well, if Diggs, you did it this year, you'd be happy about it.
No, because you got lucky. It was injury-based. When they were both healthy, Thielen was
Diggs
better.
But Diggs has also suffered some injuries over the last several years, too. So, you know, if you're going to play the injury card, you got to play both
ways.
No, I'm
not playing any card. I'm playing this card. When they're both healthy, Thielen is consistently better than Diggs. And it's that simple. I don't see how you can rank Diggs over Thielen. Thielen's better. How can anyone argue that?
I'm with you. But, you know, again, Diggs has certainly had his share of moments where he's been good.
Absolutely. But he's just... I just don't see how you can rank him ahead of Thielen.
I'll go back to something I said about Diggs. I think it was 2 years ago. I think he's going to end up one of those receivers that his talent and his stats are never going to be equal. Like, he has the ability to be such a better wide receiver statistically, but it's never going to show up on the team that he plays with.
Yeah. All right. So if Dave, Ben, and I all said Adam Thielen.
I can give you another name.
Okay. Go ahead.
Taysom Hill.
Yeah. He's good.
Who continues to steal precious stats away from the Saints studs that we love, but he continues to be a small part of this offense, but he's making big plays. And I'm kind of fearing / hoping in a weird way that it continues. I almost wish that there was a way that we could use him.
Why would you want
as a flex in fantasy? Because I want to use him as a flex in fantasy.
That's for the one touchdown he scores every six games?
No, because I think he could get more usage as 2020 comes along.
I don't think
he could end up being their number two receiver.
He could end up being their starting quarterback if they let Breeze walk as a free agent. I mean, you know, and they don't bring back Bridgewater. So
there you go. Sean, and then that thing can get really crazy.
Sean Payton loves him. It's the worst thing for fantasy.
Yeah, it's annoying.
Oh, he's a good player for what he does, but he's terrible for what we do.
So, okay. Jamie, who was the player who impressed you?
Oh, DK Metcalf. Give yourself some credit, buddy. Pat yourself on the back. Woo! I gave you a hard time about a lot of stuff, but, you know, you've been all over DK Metcalf from the beginning when, you know, it was, oh, is he just a combine freak and, you know, this physical specimen? And, you know, you loved it from the start where he ended up with Seattle. And if anybody just saw combine to now, and that's all you know, just the way that he looked, the way that he ran, and what he did in this playoff game, you're pretty impressed with DK Metcalf. It was a strong performance, you know, for him taking the step of, I'm the guy next year. And, you know, Tyler Lockett's going to be, it's going to be probably like a Viking situation where there's going to be one guy great 1 week, one guy disappointing. And we've seen that time and time again this year as well. But week 17 in a big game for them, he led them in targets. And then you come back this week and what he was able to do against Philadelphia, we know that the Eagles secondary is not very good, but he had just some monster plays. And as he continues to get better, it's going to be fun to watch.
Yeah. Do you think Metcalf's going to be a consistent wide receiver, or do you think he's going to be kind of a boom or bust wide receiver week to week?
He could be Will Fuller.
I think he could be better than
Will
Fuller.
I would agree. But you know, just to what Adam was talking about, you know, I think if you got a healthy Will Fuller, you love it. You know, I mean, that's the kind of player that he's been. He's, when he's been on the field, he's put up a lot of big numbers. But
right. I think there's a chance that he shells Lockett and becomes the number one guy for Seattle next year.
Lockett never really profiled, though, as a number one guy. Like
he had a lot of targets. Well, I don't know if he had the most targets. I'd have to go back and double check because he only had 70.
He led them in targets. But okay. I think you look at it as he never really profiled as, this is a number one wide receiver. You know, he's always been a Will Fuller type of guy, you know, boomer bust type of receiver. You know, I don't know if Metcalf is a true number one receiver. He looks the part, you know, physically, but can he do it? That's the question.
And is the team's philosophy going to change?
No.
They've been run, and now all of a sudden they've got two really dangerous receivers. You know, you're talking about a Vikings team that ranked, what, 30th in pass attempts, Adam?
30, yes.
Okay, so it you see how hard it is for two receivers to have good numbers there. You're going to expect that from Seattle moving forward when they're not going to throw the ball.
The big games that the two of them have had have come when they have these double-digit targets. So
that's rare.
How often is that going to happen?
But even they haven't really had big. I mean, you know, week 17, they played well. I don't think Metcalf scored in that game. Plus, you're factoring in they use the tight end, whether it's going to be a healthy Will Disley or Jacob Hollister next year. You know, they'll use that position. They tried to, you know, add another piece with Josh Gordon. It didn't work. So are they done tinkering with that spot too? You know, you had Doug Baldwin's unexpected retirement. I don't think that's something they were counting on, you know, 2 years ago when they signed him. So we'll see. We'll see what they do this offseason. But there's a lot to like about Metcalf.
Yeah.
It's going to be fun to debate those rookie receivers, you know, the class of 2019 receivers. with McLaurin and AJ Brown and Debo. You know, we I think we talked about this last week, Adam. We sort of overlook Metcalf a little bit, and you know, he continues to remind us that he could be maybe the best. I don't think he's better than AJ Brown, but he could be in that conversation.
He's not better than AJ Brown. However, AJ Brown's quarterback just threw 15 passes in a win. You know, so that scares me a little bit.
They were playing a bad team, though.
All right. Who's a player who
in a place where they always lose?
Who did not impress you? A player who did not impress you this weekend? I'll just start. Well, let's go back to Ben Schrager.
It was Julian Edelman. He had the rushing touchdown, whoopee, but he 3 for 30 on 5 targets and the biggest drop of the game. A guy who led the league in drops this year. He really disappointed. Yikes. I mean, over the past 4 games, 34 yards a game. It's obviously he wasn't 100% healthy. But he was a big letdown this week.
That's pretty interesting. Yeah, we're going to rank the wide receivers who have been eliminated. He's not going to be number one because Michael Thomas will be number one. I can't imagine. John Brown or Julian Edelman?
Edelman.
Edelman, still.
I'll still go Edelman.
Yeah. Well, let's see who the quarterback is in New England.
All right, Dave, who disappointed you? Who did not impress you?
Edelman's quarterback, Tom Brady. You know, you talk about the playoffs and the greats tend to rise up and play to the high level that you expect in these big games, and Brady didn't do it. This offense in general really didn't do it. They did not look like typical Patriots playoff offenses, and Brady really hasn't looked good all season long. Would it really be that shocking if the Patriots let Brady walk?
It wouldn't, but who are they going to replace him with?
If they let him walk or he walks, because I think those are two different things. Robert Kraft said he hopes and prays he comes back or retires. They don't want to see him go anywhere else.
Right. Do they want to make him one of the top 5 highest paid quarterbacks in the league?
On a 1-year deal, I wouldn't be surprised if they did that. I mean, you know, it's a Kobe Bryant, you know, thank you for your service plus what you can still do for us.
What if he decides that he wants to play 3 more years and you've got to pay him that much money over 3 years?
I mean, as the cap continues to increase, you know, the one thing about the Patriots, they're so good at managing salaries with, you know, young players and getting the most out of those guys. I think if you're looking at it from the Patriots standpoint, is this defense can still win now. It's very clear that they're still a very good unit. You get another year in N'Keal Harry. You get Edelman's still playing at a high level.
They can restock the line.
That's the biggest thing. If they can find an offense, because look, you know, Sony Michel did not play great this year at all. He closed the year looking a lot better, given what the blocking was in front of him. And you still get that group. You know, if White, Burkhead, Michel, it's still a very good group for what this offense can be. They need better blocking and they need another receiver. You know, the Muhammad's a new trade. You know, I know they looked at it as they getting 2 years of a guy who they thought could fit their system and maybe be their Amendola, you know, somebody who can be the second slot guy and play outside, do some different things. It didn't look great, but
doesn't mean it can't look great.
Oh, 100%. Getting a young tight end too. You know, I think that's something that, you know, with Ben Watson retiring, Matt LaCosse is not the answer. So there's still a lot to like for Brady to bounce back and be a good NFL quarterback. He's never going to be a great fantasy quarterback again, though.
Well, I'll just break down.
One. Right.
I'll break down the stats for you here for Brady because, you know, it's easy to forget his first 8 games of the season. He was on pace for 4,500 yards, 26 touchdowns, 8 interceptions. So
playing against who, though?
Right, yeah. No, he had 6 good games in those 8. Pittsburgh in week 1, that was before the Fitzpatrick trade. Miami, Jets, Redskins, Giants, Browns.
And the Miami game, he had Antonio Brown.
He completed 64% of his passes, 7.5 yards per attempt.
For what it's worth, he did have Josh Gordon for a few of those games, too.
His last 8 games, he was on pace for 3,600 yards, only 22 touchdowns, 8 interceptions. He was awful. And that's really the last 9 games, if you conclude the playoffs. Brady's an unexciting fantasy quarterback. He does finish 12th overall, but that's not on a per-game basis. On a per-game basis, he was closer to
20. I heard some good theories about where he could go if he decides to play. The Los Angeles rumor is the one that's been talked about all season long. If he ended up with the Chargers and that offense, I mean, let's say Melvin Gordon walks, but you have Keenan Allen, Mike Williams, Hunter Henry, and Austin Eckler. That's a pretty good group. You know, if
still has an offensive line issue.
Agreed. But, you know, that's still a pretty good group of skill players. The other one that's interesting, which I heard today, was the Colts. You know, they're not sold on Jacoby Brissett. He walks into one of the best offensive lines in football. Great play caller. Some pretty decent weapons. You know, if they can develop one of the young guys, Paris Campbell, you know, would be the logical one. But, you know, that'd be an interesting setup for him to still win. You know, I mean, you can probably give Chris Ballard a Hall of Fame quarterback and Frank Reich a mind like Tom Brady behind that line, and they could be a serious contender in the AFC South.
That would be fun.
Yeah.
Do you think that there's like a combo deal maybe with McDaniels and Brady? Where if McDaniels leaves, Brady will go.
It sounds like McDaniels wants to go to Cleveland because he's from the area.
I don't think McDaniels is going to go to the Colts.
No, that's not going to happen.
All right, let's move on here. Okay, so we got Edelman from Ben. We got Brady from Dave. Jamie, who did not impress you this weekend?
The other 40-year-old, Breeze, did not look good.
Yeah.
You look at the way he finished the season. He was a monster, absolute statistical star like he usually is. I just got finished writing the win percentage for quarterbacks. He's not in the top five, but a lot of that has to do with the fact of how his season went to start the year. But, you know, Adam, we talked about this. He was two or three in points per game.
Yep.
It just depends on how you look at Stafford. But he was very good. And to see the way he finished, give Minnesota's defense credit. Obviously, they did a great job. I don't know if it was a broadcast or something I read said that the Vikings took a page out of the Falcons playbook and what they did to them in their two meetings at the end of the season. They kept everything in front of them. Breeze just you see the lack of arm strength on the interception that he threw trying to get the ball to Ted Ginn in the seam. He just doesn't have it anymore, at least consistently. And that was a really, really bad throw. And you realize, I forget who was saying this. Some receiver was talking about this, but Michael Thomas just saves a lot of bad Drew Brees throws because he just doesn't drop anything. Wonder, like, Brady looked like he fell off a cliff a little bit, at 42. Brees is going to be 41, and so he's a free agent. It'd be shocking if he left New Orleans, but, he's just not the same. He's still going to put up a lot of numbers, obviously, if he's with Sean Payton and the Saints, but he just doesn't look the same guy. Didn't look the same guy in that game for sure.
Yeah, all right. I think I got to push back on that a little because I think a bad game is leaving a sour taste in your mouth because I'm willing to overlook it. He was so good and he has still been statistically elite year after year after year.
Oh, he's going to put up numbers.
Yeah, he's awesome.
Throws when he's facing some tough defenses just don't look the same.
It's hard to draft a quarterback when you see him not necessarily missing throws, but not having the arm strength that you want.
It's more the arm strength. He doesn't miss throws. I mean, he's the most accurate passer in the NFL. Mm-hmm. He just had another big season of, his completion percentage. But again, I think Michael Thomas makes a lot of big catches for him. And Sean Payton opens up a lot of things for him. You just have to wonder at some point, when's it going to be where he hits the wall? And was this an indication of, okay, they did what the Falcons did. Was the next team going to do what the Vikings did? And is this going to be, sort of a continual pattern? Remember what happened to the Rams?
Bill Belichick
and the Patriots exposed the Rams in the Super Bowl, and we saw what happened this year.
I don't buy that entirely. Because the Rams offense had struggled for like 6 or 7 weeks before that. Belichick's getting a little bit too much credit there. That offense had not been good basically once Cooper Kupp got hurt and Todd Gurley got hurt. They haven't had a healthy Gurley, and their offensive line got worse. I'm still pretty confident in Drew Brees because, like you said, he was great. He was the number two or number three quarterback on a per-game basis this year. The thing that concerns me with Brees is that his pass attempts went way up, and I don't know that they want to do that. Kamara wasn't that involved. I think once Kamara got hurt, he came back. He didn't really get the touches that you're used to seeing from Alvin Kamara. His last seven games. Now, he played eight games, not including the playoff game, after returning from an injury. I kind of eliminated the first game because he had four carries. You look at the seven games after that, he was on pace for 185 carries. That's like really, really low. So Brees was just throwing the ball more. One thing that could really stop him is he goes back to throwing 33 times a game instead of about 38 times a game. He was at 37.5 this year. That could hurt Drew Brees, and I imagine he won't throw 37.5 times per game next year.
Well, their defense fell apart. They had a lot of injuries.
They just didn't run the ball as well.
And they didn't run the ball well. I mean, you also, I forget who their center is, but losing Max Unger last year, that changed some things. They had Pete in and out of the lineup, due to injury.
Ramchek, Armstead, too.
Yeah, was banged up, so they've had, their share of injuries on the line. And so there were some changes. Yeah, Jared Cook missed a couple of games, too. That factored in. And obviously, Brees had to work his way back from the thumb injury after missing five games. Not that he missed a beat, but it's just a matter of, we're trying to project forward here. And so for a guy that is going to be 41, that you just wonder, is he going to be the same guy? He's going to be still very good. Is he going
to
be great?
And he's going to lose a couple passes per game to Taysom Hill. Like, there's a bunch of little things that are going to take him away. I don't think he's a top 10 fantasy quarterback next year.
But how much does the arm strength matter to you guys when his top two targets aren't deep ball guys? It's Michael
That's
Thomas.
What they and really need to add. They need to add a deep threat.
Could Michael Thomas? Well, I mean, they have two guys that stretch the field. They
just
don't use
them
very well.
They don't use them.
And they're not very good. Ginn's not
Ted Ginn was good 10 years ago.
Okay. Well, he had one good year. He had the one great year with Cam.
Moving on. One player who did not impress me was Josh Allen. Guy, he's so...
Yeah, well, he was great as a receiver and as a rusher.
What a terrible throw by John Brown, by the way. But he is so inaccurate. But I think if you want to be encouraged about Josh Allen, because last week I'm talking about him as the next superstar in the NFL, if he can fix his mechanics and become a little bit more accurate, he was the number 7 quarterback in fantasy this year. He threw for 3,100 yards. That's terrible. And he completes 58% of his passes. That's terrible.
Yeah. Pete Prisco drink has, you know, he's shares your love of Josh Allen. He would like to see him improve as a passer, not necessarily as a rusher. For our purposes, his rushing is great. Mm-hmm. He thinks they need a big receiver.
They do. That's what I say.
And that's, you know, a huge part of what I think this offseason is going to be about. Remember they were the ones that first made the move to get Antonio Brown, and Brown said no. And so, will they be aggressive and, let's say, try and get an A.J. Green, which I think would be a great fit? Will they just sit back in the draft? And it's a great receiver draft, you know, and our Ryan Wilson, who does a great job, you know, with our NFL draft coverage, one of his mock drafts, I forget which receiver he has going to them, but he says they're taking a receiver in the first round. And it makes so much sense, you know, just continue to add pieces to this offense. They did it with the offensive line last year, free agency in the draft. You know, I think they'll continue to do that as well, you know, at the receiver spot. And that's, you know, a big thing. Dawson Knox will get better. You know, if you say John Brown's the 2, Cole Beasley's the slot, and you add a, you know, what should be a number 1 guy, that's going to be a pretty lethal offense with Devin Singletary back there.
Yeah. So Cam Newton, you know, early in his career, was his second year, he completed 57.7% of his passes. He was pretty bad until he got Norv Turner. So there's hope, I guess, but something's going to have to change. I do think that if Josh Allen can become a better passer, he could be a great player, because you do see
if he runs as much.
He won't have to run quite as much if he throws better. But you do see plays that he makes, great throws that he makes. He obviously has the arm strength. He's going to run the football. Maybe not this much, but he's going to be a rusher. I do think that he just has to figure out how to, like, whatever it is, mechanics or whatever, become more accurate. Don't have to be super accurate. Don't have to be Drew Brees, but complete low 60s of your passes, 62-63%, and we could be talking about a great player here.
He was, you know, for win percentage, and what we talk about win percentage is the players that impacted fantasy leagues in terms of what teams they're on, fantasy teams they're on. So it's not an exact science of how they are in terms of their fantasy production. But he and Kyler Murray were 11 and 12 in their win percentage. If you recall our rankings conversation, they were basically 6 through 8 for almost everybody. Mm-hmm. I don't remember Dave's exactly, but I know Heath, me, Adam, I think for sure, Ben. Kyler and Josh Allen were almost back to back, and it feels like they're going to be linked together very much in 2020, but they were the number 2 and 3 rushing quarterbacks in 2019.
And people are going to chase those guys.
Well, Kyler's going to be everybody's breakout quarterback, and understandably so. And, you know, Allen's going to be somebody I think that a lot of people hope takes the next step. I think he's got the chance to do it. Adam, you're the only one though that had Allen over Kyler.
But that doesn't really make a lot.
You still taking Allen over Deshaun Watson if you're starting a team?
Oh my goodness.
Wow, that was a pretty good performance by Deshaun Watson. I think that Allen has a higher ceiling. I really do. I mean, it's hard to justify saying that now. But what am I going
to
do?
It's hard to justify saying it last
week. I'm going to change my mind after every game. I mean, no. So, sure, I'll take Josh Allen. I do think he could be a star. I really do. It's hard to justify taking him over Kyler Murray, though. Because Murray threw for like 800 more yards. Because Murray's just going to throw the ball more. They play in a
He's a better passer.
They play in an up-tempo offense. The Bills are a low pass volume team. So I'd have to change that ranking in fantasy. Josh Allen ahead of Murray. I had them 6-7. I have to make that switch. Of course, it doesn't really matter right now. But okay, let's move on. Let's talk about some of the games, the other players involved, and do some rankings. We have 3 episodes per week this offseason. Remember, we got our awards show tomorrow and our all-decade team being announced tomorrow. Well, teams, I guess. All-decade teams announced tomorrow on the show, and our awards that we told you about beginning at the end of week 17. Biggest bust, you know, MVP, waiver wire player of the year, waiver wire bust of the year, that kind of stuff. We also have a Fantasy Football Today newsletter. It's really cool. Sign up at cbssports.com/newsletter. Stay up to date with fantasy football content all off season long. You got your news of the day, podcast content, the editorial pieces, the prospect profiles, the rankings, and more. So anytime there's anything you need to know about, you'll see it in the newsletter, cbssports.com/newsletter. Sign up there. All right, so I like to focus on the players who have been eliminated. But first, let me give you a couple of stats of the day. Remember, Jamie, I don't know if, I think it was just me and you, it was last Tuesday. I said there was a stat about Carson Wentz that was really impressive, and I couldn't remember. Well,
yep.
Loyal listener Scott Sheriff texted me. He knew the stat. He knew what I was talking about. Carson Wentz is the first quarterback in NFL history with 4,000 passing yards without a wide receiver gaining 500 receiving yards. Mm-hmm. So that's historic, and that's the stat. Here's your quirky stat of the day. The top five quarterbacks in pass attempts this year finished as QB 5, 8, 11, 12, and 17. Volume did not mean success. Jameis
Winston. No, it did for Jameis.
Jameis was the only one. He was fifth. Mm-hmm. Jared Goff and Jameis, I believe, were tied most pass attempts in the NFL. Winston finished fifth. Goff was QB 17. But Brady, Wentz, and Ryan were, Wentz was 8, Ryan was 11, Brady was 12. They were all top 5 in pass attempts.
It's interesting for Ryan because he missed a game.
Yeah, it's true. And you compare that to last year where there were 3 quarterbacks who were top 5 in pass attempts and also top 5 in fantasy. 2, 3, and 4, Ryan, Roethlisberger, and Luck. And it was interesting because I looked at passing volume as a buy low. And I made 2 mistakes. I said, buy low on Jared Goff. He's throwing the ball a ton. He's got to get better. And I said, buy low on Tom Brady. He's throwing the ball a ton. He's got an easy schedule. He's got to get better. And neither worked out. So I don't know what to make of that. If it was just a fluke, or we should just be looking at other metrics now.
I guess it depends because Goff actually wasn't horrible to finish the season.
Yeah, I wouldn't say he was a good buy low, though, because he would have had to really wait it out.
There are a lot of leagues where he got dropped. You know, when he had that stretch of single-digit fantasy points, it was like a 6-game stretch, or 4 of those, he was 4 points or less.
3 in a row, he combined for 11 points.
It took him till the end of the year to...
His final 4 games, he was 21 or more in 3 of his final 4.
But it took him till the end of the year to do that. He had back-to-back games with 20 fantasy points or more once until that.
Yeah. Which was in the middle of single-digit stretch.
Yep.
All right. So just want to throw that out there. Some news and notes. Jamie kind of mentioned this, but the Colts did not commit to Jacoby Brissett. Also seems like Eric Ebron's going to walk.
They don't want Ebron back.
So are we going to fall for Jack Doyle again?
If Tom Brady's their quarterback.
I think he's in the, you know, conversation with, I'm just thinking again where we had the guys ranked at 8 through 10. You have to consider him with Noah Fant and T.J. Hockenson and Mike Gesicki in that group. He's not better than them, or has as much upside as those guys do.
He's like the old maid of that group.
But, you know, you just talk about the floor, and the floor is probably safer for him.
I don't think I could have picked a less timely reference than calling him the old maid of that group. you're welcome.
You're the old maid of our group, Dave.
Yeah, I know.
Ben, would you take Dallas Goedert or Jack Doyle? Let's assume Jacoby Brissett is back and Eric Ebron isn't. Would you take Goddard or?
I'll take Goddard. Unless the Eagles add a huge piece to their pass offense, I'll still take Goddard. He's going to be their number 2 target.
Anybody else?
No, not if they're healthy.
You think
I don't know if Alshon will be healthy.
I don't know that he will be.
No, but if he's healthy. I mean, you know, and if Deshaun's healthy, you know, those are still 2 significant pieces.
Ben and I looked at it today. Alshon's cap hit is pretty huge if they let him go. So he's going to be an Eagle for 2020.
He'll be there no matter what.
Just a matter of how effective he'll be or when he'll even get the chance to play.
Okay, Robert Kraft wants Brady back with the Patriots or he wants him to retire. There was no pass interference on Kyle Rudolph's game-winning touchdown, according to the NFL. What about according
Agreed.
To you guys? Agreed?
Wrong.
Ben?
Oh, no.
That was totally interference.
If you call that, then you missed 100 calls during the season just like it.
I agree, 100%. But it should have been both guys, you know, hand fighting and offsetting penalties. He clearly pushed off.
They rarely call the offset.
Right,
penalties.
They don't.
Oh, I understand what they call and what they don't call.
Was there pass interference?
Just isolating one play, it was pass interference.
Was there pass interference? Yeah. I think there was. I think that was a crappy call. But
it
like
happens
split here.
On it happens so often. Like if you're gonna call it, then you gotta call it in the other 256 games during the year.
I don't know. It seems like a little more egregious than
I know
that.
It stinks for Saints fans. The last 3 years have been so terrible for Saints fans.
Really?
Just awful.
Yeah. Really, really bad. I feel terrible for them, but I don't think it was blatant offensive pass interference.
DK Metcalf set a Seahawks record for most receiving yards in a playoff game. Derrick Henry had the most rushing yards against a Bill Belichick coach team in the playoffs. I didn't know this. Tennessee has made only 8 field goals this season. I heard that on the broadcast. I could not believe that. They have made 8 field goals in 17 games, 18 attempts. Drew Brees lost his first fumble of the season, and you all probably remember the play. It was a crucial play. He said there was miscommunication. He basically said a wide receiver ran the wrong route. The ball, quote, "The ball should have been out of my hands, and all of a sudden that wasn't the route that was run, so now I'm just trying to throw the ball into the dirt to avoid a sack." Interesting. All right, let's rank some players going into 2020. We're going to basically assume situations mostly stay the same here. Rank them. Drew Brees, Tom Brady, Josh Allen, and Carson Wentz. All right, we know Brady's last, so how would you rank Brees, Allen, and Wentz?
I'm still going to take Wentz first. I'm going to take Brees next, Allen after that.
Allen, Brees, Wentz.
Brees, Allen, Wentz.
Okay.
What were you, Dave?
So we have I was Wentz, Brees, Allen.
Totally mixed here. So Jamie had Allen first, right?
Yeah, his rushing is going to make him a better fantasy quarterback.
And Ben had Brees first, right?
Yep.
Now, granted, you just said we're going to assume everything stays the same. If everything stays the same, then there's no doubt that Wentz would be third on the list. But I'm assuming that the Eagles are going to get aggressive about adding pieces around Carson Wentz.
Well, what if they just have Alshon Jeffrey and DeSean Jackson come back? You know, I mean, that's
then
is
I probably
pieces.
Won't have him at the top of this list. And if Buffalo goes
really?
And adds somebody else, then Allen will probably be at the top of this list.
I think we can assume. I think for this exercise, we can safely assume the Bills are going to add a wide receiver. And
Philadelphia's not.
No. But I think you're underrating Alshon and Jackson. Like, I think that would be a good thing. You're like, oh, if they bring them back, that would be bad for Wentz. I think it'd be good for Wentz.
I'd be surprised if Alshon's all ready to go.
Okay, fair enough. Boy, Wentz threw the ball so much this year. So that, I don't know, would continue. But this is really tough. Of all the rankings we're going to do, I think this is the toughest. These three guys.
Adam, here's the Wentz stat that scares me. How many games do you think he's scored 25-plus fantasy points in 4-point-per-touchdown leagues since 2017?
Well, that's a lot of points, isn't it?
It's a lot of points, but that's a big game.
Since 2017, his MVP season, basically, where he would have been the MVP? Five.
One time.
Really?
Yeah, so
it surprised me, too.
It was really surprising, but we talk about Josh Allen not having a ton of upside, having a high floor, but Wentz doesn't have the ton of upside either if you look at the last 2 years.
That's amazing. That's a great stat. Yeah, Brees is so different because Allen has not thrown for more than 266 yards in any game so far. Brees is a huge upside play on a week-to-week basis. But I think Wentz and Allen, I guess, are just a little bit more like steady Eddie, I guess, right? Yes.
Sure.
Yes, Brees has the most upside of the group.
On a weekly basis, but on the road, he's usually not that good. He was this year, though. All right. Well, that's an interesting group. Rank these guys. Alvin Kamara, Devin Singletary, Miles Sanders, James White, Sony Michel, and any other running back you'd want to rank from the teams who have been eliminated.
Well, Frank Gore, he'll still be playing.
Yeah, Frank Gore. That's it, right? We got the Saints, we got the Bills, the Eagles, and the Pats.
So Kamara's going to be at the top.
Right.
Sanders is second for me. Singletary would be third. And then after that, I get if it's PPR, James White would be next. And then Sony would be after that. Jordan Howard would probably be after that.
I'm the same way. Exact same.
Yeah. We'll see where Howard goes.
Right.
I wonder if Sony stays. I wonder if they try and they get the Brady situation cleared up. They want to try and get something better at running back, and I wonder if they make a move. Again, they did it in the last draft to get Damian Harris. He obviously wasn't what I thought.
Why would you get rid of
Sonny
Michel on his rookie deal?
because he's not. They could keep him, but they could replace him. I guess that's probably the.
I think
way
they're
to
really
it. They're
content with the group that they have now and the way their running game works.
I don't know.
Yeah,
I mean,
goes back to the offensive line too.
Their offensive line. Their running game stunk this year. The Patriots. Now, we don't talk enough about Singletary, by the way, because he obviously didn't crack
He's
anybody's.
Great, man.
He didn't crack anybody's top 10 lists, and I get that. I just wonder how much farther down he'd be. He averaged 5.1 yards per carry. He was really, really good against the Texans. Very elusive. His 16-game pace, because he only played 12 games this year in the regular season, his 16-game pace was about 1,300 total yards and, unfortunately, only 6 touchdowns. That was a problem for him. He just barely ever scored. But I was pretty impressed with him. And,
well, he also didn't play over 70% of snaps until week 11, so we really only got that real sample size towards the end.
Sure, but the same thing with Miles Sanders. It's not like he was playing a lot of snaps until Jordan Howard got hurt. And so everybody's all gaga over Sanders. And so, I mean,
they're kind of the same, right?
Yeah, I mean, they're similar. I think, you know, you probably feel a little bit more comfortable with Doug Peterson helping Miles Sanders, except for the fact of what's the second guy going to be? You know, is the second guy going to be Boston Scott? Is the second guy going to be somebody like Jordan Howard who, you know, comes in and takes too many carries away? Whereas Singletary, look, we don't know what they're going to do with Frank Gore. Are they going to bring back somebody like TJ Yeldon? Are they going to add another piece to the backfield? But, you know, if you look at Buffalo's offense trending in the right direction and probably favors a running game a little bit more so maybe than Philadelphia's does.
Right,
so,
but how much is Josh Allen's rushing in the red zone hurt?
It does hurt, for sure. I think it hurts. You know, Ben Gresh talked about this before the season. I don't think it was in regard to – it was in regard to Lamar Jackson and Mark Ingram. Running quarterbacks, when they break containment, they run. Whereas – non-running quarterbacks, they look for their outlet passes, you know, and so that's where you see guys like Kamara win, you know, maybe McCaffrey a little bit more this year. Not that he was bad last year, but, you know,
and you saw
Cam,
the duds in the passing game with Singletary, where he gets maybe one or two targets in a lot of games this year.
And we talked about that going into this weekend's games. I don't remember how many catches he finished against Texans, but
6, I think.
You know, that's what you'd like to see a little bit more. And it would, you know, help and hurt Josh Allen a little bit because it would take away some of his rushing ability, but. You know, those are the easy yak yards that you get by, you know, a player like him. So they're very close for me. You know, Sanders wasn't in my top 10, but he's in my top 12. But Singletary's in my top 15.
All right, so here's an encouraging stat for Singletary. It was the touchdowns. If he had scored more touchdowns, he might be getting a little more buzz right now. You look at carries inside the 5-yard line. He only had 2 of them. Josh Allen had 5 of them. Frank Gore had 11 carries inside the 5. That is not going to happen next year. So there will be a lot more opportunities for touchdowns for Devin Singletary. All right, so how about the wide receivers? You know, ranking them is probably fairly easy. It's Michael Thomas 1. Right now it would be Julian Edelman 2. John Brown 3, right?
Yes.
Okay, we're also looking at Cole Beasley.
I don't know. I still like Ted Ginn. You guys are terrible.
Alshon Jeffrey. Maybe N'Keal Harry has a nice year. I mean, could you make the case for John Brown over Julian Edelman in a non-PPR league?
Sure, because
Brady leaves. End of story.
No. Let's assume Brady comes back, and
I think Edelman would
very
still be more
close.
Consistent than Brown, though.
They were within
in a non-PPR.
They were within 7. But did John Brown sit week 17? He did, right? He actually scored in non-PPR. He scored more points per game than Julian Edelman, barely, but he did.
Right, and he was probably more up and down than Edelman. With Edelman, you'll get the consistent 7, 8, 9, 10.
They were both very consistent.
Non-PPR.
Despite the fact that Edelman was a college quarterback, Brown had more passing touchdowns.
Right, that was a weird thing about John Brown. At the end of the year, he really didn't do much as a receiver. His receiving yards in his last 5 regular season games, 39, 26, 26, 99, 53, but he had 2 receiving and 2 passing touchdowns in those games. So, from a yard standpoint, Dave, Edelman was much more consistent. From a point standpoint, they both were very consistent. And Brown was clearly one of the best draft picks of the season. So, you know, he just had a great year going outside the top 100, I think. He ends up being almost a top 12 wide receiver.
Sure.
Yeah, unless they add somebody.
Well, I
don't think he's the type of receiver that anybody's going to be excited to draft. I still don't see him being a top 60 type pick.
John Brown?
John Brown.
He'll be in the cusp.
End of round 5?
He'll be in the cusp, yeah.
Yeah, it'd be interesting.
He's going to rank him 10. So
he could fall too because of the poor end of year play. I mean, we know that he had tough matchups and he still did pretty well,
right.
But people are going to be scared. You know, he had that hot start and didn't do so hot towards the end of the year. So he may be a good value for us, but yeah, I don't know that he cracks my top 50.
It comes down to where are you comfortable taking boom or bust type of receivers in your fantasy draft? Is it round 5? Some people like to start taking risks then. I get it. I think round 7 is usually when people start to loosen up their collar and say, okay, time to take some shots. Let's go. I think he'll probably fall right in between there. I could see John Brown being a round 6 pick.
Yeah, I still think round 5 is probably the sweet spot for him.
We have a mock draft today, so we'll find out. And tomorrow, when you look at the Saints, the Eagles, the Bills, and the Patriots, do you see running backs or wide receivers that didn't do much this year that could break out next year? I mean, you look at the Patriots rookies, for example. You look at Boston Scott, maybe.
Adam, we got breaking news.
Oh, what do we got?
Two at the NFL.
Okay, great.
Oh, he's declaring. Good.
Declared.
Good.
Do you see any players that could break out in 2020?
Well, sure. N'Keal Harry could take that step, especially after basically redshirting half of his rookie year. And that's probably going to be quarterback dependent in New England, but that's a big body that they'd probably like to try and get involved a little bit more in the offense. So he could certainly step up.
If Buffalo status quo, Duke Williams, he had a great playoff game.
Yeah, he got a lot of targets. There's a big receiver.
Yeah, I think he's probably their number 3 receiver of choice right now.
By default, I mean.
Yeah.
They kind of made that decision in the middle of the year.
I wouldn't say
anything. Obviously, that's the decision.
He had 4 catches for 49 yards on 10 targets. Wasn't that great.
He did play more this week.
Got a chance. You know, it's not somebody that you're going to say must start. He doesn't have the same upside as N'Keal Harry by any stretch. But, you know, I think if you're just talking deeper leagues, end of draft pick, if he's still their third guy, I wouldn't have a problem taking a flyer on.
And that 4 for 49 line this week was better than any N'Keal Harry game all year.
Yeah, it's true. Jacoby Myers? Anybody?
Sure, it depends. If he gets that opportunity, yeah. Mm-hmm. I like him.
Dorsett's a free agent, so he probably walks. It doesn't matter. I don't think Dorsett matters because he's got to crack the top 3, and the top 3 are still going to be Harry, Edelman, and Sanu. So.
Okay, guys. So before I read some emails at fantasyfootball@cbsi.com, let me ask you this. Does Derrick Henry remind you of anyone? As I feel like I've never really seen anyone quite like Derrick Henry.
I mean, we can go back into the
Christian
the
Okoye for me.
You can think of like big bruising backs. For a second, I thought you said Christian McCaffrey and that you were making a joke. But I mean, like you could think of
Darren
like
Sproles.
big heavy hitters like Brandon Jacobs.
No, but he's not. He's so much faster than Brandon Jacobs. I don't even think Bettis. I mean, yeah, Okoye, it's interesting. I don't really remember Okoye that well.
It's because of your baby.
Yeah, I guess so. Well, I mean, I remember Christian Okoye. I guess I just don't remember him playing. I don't know if that makes any sense. I'm amazed at Derrick Henry. I just say that.
I think, you know, the comps that we talked about last week, you know, Michael Turner in his best years with Atlanta, you know, Marshawn Lynch in his best years with Seattle. Those are the type of guys that you look at and say, it's not going to be 7-8 years of this, but 3 to 5, you know, right now he's in year 2 of doing this because of what he did, you know, basically the last 4 games last year, but he was the featured guy last year. Mm-hmm. And then what he's done all season this year. You know, he's probably got one more year of this, and then it'll start to be the injuries start to catch up with him a little bit.
Those are statistical comparisons.
Yeah, player comp.
I just think he's such a unique player. It's really cool. He and DK Metcalf are like players I've never seen before. All right, let's read some emails. fantasyfootball@cbsi.com. Here we go. Matt Powers is in a 12-team half PPR league. Keep 2. I'm keeping AJ Brown for an 8th-round pick. The other one is for a 7th-round pick. Higbee or Deontay Johnson? I know it sounds ridiculous, but I love Deontay Johnson's upside, but my other thought is I can probably draft him later than round 7. Yeah, I agree with that.
Higbee,
for sure.
Same. Yeah, I agree.
Does anybody else? I mean, Deontay Johnson's got some upsides.
He does. He's one of a handful of receivers that have yards after catch potential.
Yeah. James Washington's got upside too.
Yeah, I mean, that's what I'm going to look at from receivers this year during the offseason anyway. Who are the receivers like A.J. Brown and Deebo Samuel who are good at just running great routes, getting themselves open, making plays after the catch? I think Johnson can do that.
Interesting. All right, from Reed. I'm in a half-point PPR keeper league. Give me help with two keepers. I have the 10th overall pick. Tyreek Hill and Derrick Henry, I could keep them for one more year. I can keep, it doesn't say how long you can keep the others. Dalvin Cook in round one. Hill, okay, there we go. Dalvin Cook in round one. Tyreek Hill in round three. DJ Moore in round five. Miles Sanders in round six. Kyler Murray in round eight. Derrick Henry in round nine. Tyler Higbee and Jarvis Landry in round 16.
It's a good team.
Very good. Now, Hill and Henry are only 1 year. I'm thinking the others are all you can keep for 2 years.
How many can you keep?
Two. So you got
keeping Moore and Sanders.
I would.
I'm sorry. Henry and Sanders.
Henry and Sanders.
Yeah. I'd keep Henry and Cook.
What? You take Cook in round one instead of either?
I've got two top five, six-ish running backs, one of whom I can keep for more than 1 year. And Henry was a round nine pick.
Yeah, but you this got Miles Sanders in round six.
I know. I've got Derrick Henry in round nine.
I
yeah, no,
it's
that's
easy,
fine.
But it's not Cook in round one. It's Sanders in round six and Henry in round nine.
And then Sanders for another year in round six next year. That's
Sanders may be better than Cook in 2 years.
From Garrison. We're looking at starting a dynasty league this upcoming season. Any recommendations? Fun things to talk about or to think about or keep in mind? Maybe doing a podcast or a section of the podcast on this. How about this, Garrison? This email response. Give him ideas for startup dynasty league.
To draft or to put together?
Everything. Soup to
From
nuts.
The ground up.
Find 11 of your friends.
Make sure that they're dedicated.
Hopefully they have enough money in their bank account to pay you every year.
Yes.
Do waivers on Wednesdays.
How many rounds? How many positions of each? You know, how many spots?
If you're
going
to do non-IDP, then you probably want 20 rounds. If you're going to do IDP, you want maybe 25 to 30, depending on how deep you want to go with your defensive players.
I think when you're going to have a deeper league, you want to start more players. You don't want to have a bunch of guys on your bench. So have some. Maybe have a super flex. That's always fun. Maybe have like two extra flex spots in addition to the super flex, something like that.
Do a taxi squad so that you can stash some rookies that you don't have to worry about playing. If you put them on the taxi squad, you can't use them at all during the season. Do some IR spots as well, because dynasty leagues, you don't want to obviously have to cut guys that are hurt. You still need to pick up players off of waivers.
How many players do you keep each year?
All of them. It's a dynasty league.
You're going to have to
make some decisions depending on how, some dynasty leagues go three rounds of rookie drafts. Some go six. You know, it depends on how many, rookies you want to replace. And that's, veterans that are cut as well. So those are the players that you'll end up replacing on your team, the ones that you cut. Or you can just keep everybody and not do anybody.
Right. However many people you cut, those are your open roster spots for your rookie draft.
Right. And that'll also factor in, if you have players on IR spots or have players on a taxi squad, you'll have to cut those players or, activate those players and then make some decisions on your active roster.
Mm-hmm. All right, cool. Good stuff. And my league is kind of interesting. We have we can give players 1 year contracts, 3 year contracts, and 7 year contracts, I think. And then we have kind of a franchise thing. So you can do a lot of different things, but you don't have to do all that and keep it simple. This is Mitch. He has a dynasty trade. He's been offered David Montgomery, Michael Gallup, and the 8th pick of the 2020 draft. So David Montgomery, Michael Gallup, and the 8th pick of the draft. For Leonard Fournette and a third round draft pick. Would you give up Fournette and a third round draft pick in a rookie draft for Montgomery, Gallup, and the 8th pick?
Yes.
Yes.
I would do it.
Cool. Do it, man.
Michael Gallup could be really interesting because, Adam, we talked about this a lot. Aaron Rodgers, number one receiver. What if it's really Mike McCarthy's number one receiver?
Oh.
And if Cooper walks?
Oh, if Cooper walks. Yeah.
I mean, there's a path there. And we did see two receivers play very well in Green Bay under Mike McCarthy and Aaron Rodgers back in the day. So it's possible that Gallup could be very, very good. He could take a big jump statistically. And I think Montgomery, I know everybody's quick to write him off, but Bears are another team like the Patriots. They need offensive line help. They could end up putting together some big guys up front to help David Montgomery see clearer lanes. And that'll be not quite as good as Derrick Henry, of course, but a physical running back that can get some good numbers there. I don't know what to make of Fournette. I know that he was very versatile and he put together a lot of yards. I don't know how much longer he can do it for.
Well, you're just getting a good haul. I mean, you know, that eighth pick, this is going to be a great draft.
Yeah.
I mean, all the running backs are coming in the draft and the receiving class is going to be fantastic. There's a lot to like about these rookies. So the eighth pick is a hell of a lot better than the third round pick. And I'm sure you have another first round pick, assuming you didn't trade that away. So two first round picks plus Montgomery may not be that far off from Fournette, even though the catches won't come close. But the combination of Gallup and Montgomery is going to offset Fournette, and then the rookie's going
to
be better.
Yeah, Adam, you forgot to mention this part of the email because I'm reading the email. Adam sends us the emails. His receivers are Hopkins, Juju, Curtis Samuel, Debo Samuel, and Devontae Parker. His running backs are Dalvin Cook and Chris Carson. Does that change your mind about whether or not he makes this deal?
No. Well, I'm willing to give up Fournette if he's my third running back even more.
No, he's your second running back because you don't know what Carson's health is going to be.
That's true.
And he was better than Carson.
Well, but reportedly Carson
does not
need surgery.
But what are you
going
to do with
Gallup?
You better
be
ready to make a package deal with two of those receivers.
Why?
Because
Gallup could be his second best receiver.
Over Hopkins, Juju, and
Devontae. We don't know what Ben's status is going to be. So, I don't think Gallup's better than Juju now, but he could be. He was better than this year.
Very hypothetical today.
We have to be with some of these.
Yeah, it's that time of year.
But if Gallup's his third receiver,
could be potentially. I don't want to say that because I love Debo and I think Devontae could be good. But yeah, he's got potential to be the third receiver. Sure.
Well, that is going to do it for today's show. Please keep sending your emails in at fantasyfootball@cbsi.com. You don't have to put all those extra letters in though. fantasyfootball@cbsi.com. Thanks to Dave and Jamie and Ben Schrager. Big
and
show
Tua,
tomorrow.
And Tua.
Yes, big show tomorrow on Tua's Day.
Tua's Day.
Right, yes. Award show at the All-Decade Team. Da, 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 da.
There's a very bright, shining light, Sarajevo, and they needed to kill that light.
From producers Matt Damon and Ben Affleck, explore how art and music sustained hope during the siege of Sarajevo, thanks in part to humanitarians and the band U2.
U2, they represent a personification of our resistance.
The Hollywood Reporter hails Kiss the Future, moving and inspirational.
Kiss the Future! Viva Sarajevo!
Kiss the Future, new documentary now streaming exclusively on Paramount+. Go to Paramount+ to try it free. Terms apply.